Let's see, this is Friday the 13th, is it?
Night? Is this
Friday the 13th. Friday the 13th here on 1971 of August, huh?
I can tell you something right off.
Can you?
Yeah.
Good.
Well,
I'll shut it off any time you want to shut off. But
yeah,
I just wanted to say I got Mr. and Mrs. George Keyes in the office this afternoon, and any reminiscences that they have are good ones, because Mrs. Keyes was Dr. Bunnell's first secretary, and a year or so after that, just a year I suppose, George Keyes showed up as a mining short course student and stayed on to become superintendent of the power plant, and the Keyeses were here till 1935, I guess. So they're back to visit the campus, and I'm showing them what I've done in the way of a history and biography of Bunnell in the early days of the college. So do you see, it's going to be largely biographical there from the chapter headings, you know.
Well, one thing I wanted to tell you about this in the university was that we was having trouble with one of our janitors, the head janitor. He didn't like to be in work clothes on account of the girls. I had charge of the janitors, and Bunnell told me, he said, "Well, you tell him I carried swill for the pigs past the girls' dormitory when I went to school."
Did
he? He did.
And he did. He worked his way through college.
Yeah, I know that. He, and those were very fond memories of his, weren't they? Bunnell. He was a very loyal alumnus.
He was. And then, of course, they gave him his doctorate.
That was very... Now, most of these are self-explanatory, I'm sure.
Well, now, we come from near losing Bunnell right in here. And do you want to hear about that?
Yeah.
Well, there was one of the... Bloom was one of them.
Yeah.
And I don't know, Lavery is the other.
Yes, yeah. Right.
They wanted to get him out, and they were keeping Martin Stevens drunk, so he wouldn't be able to vote or couldn't, and he was chairman of the board.
Yeah, well, I knew that Martin...
Dad was one of the directors, or what do you call it, trustee, and he'd come to me and he told me, he said, "They're going to get Bunnell out unless we can keep Martin Stevens sober." I said, "I don't see how we can do that."
Yeah.
Well, he said, "We could invite him into our home." And, "Oh, Dad," I said, "I couldn't do that."
Yeah.
Well, he said, "George, we got him."
Yeah.
So we brought him in, and by golly, that man had to suck the coffee out of his cup like that.
Yeah.
He couldn't drink it. But we kept him sober. And
he'd been on a binge there for some time.
Lavery and Bloom was keeping him drunk.
Keeping him,
so he couldn't vote.
Yeah.
Well, he was sober. He was sober by the time of the meeting, and everything went off all right.
Yeah. But yet there was a 5-3 split there, all right.
Yes. Well,
yeah.
Well, you see, Dad and Martin Stevens, and I don't remember.
Well,
that.
Yeah. And Mrs.
Anyway, there was one vote to the good.
Yeah, that's right.
Bunnell.
Yeah.
And that was Stevens' vote.
Yeah.
See, if
that's right.
Been,
that's right.
Because they kept him sober, because he would vote for Dr. Bunnell.
Yeah.
If it hadn't have been for Dad and I, that would have been the finish right there.
Yeah.
So we feel kind of good about playing one part there.
That's right.
Several
That's
parts.
Right. Now, Bob, I've got on a little tape recording that I made with him. He apologizes yet that he wasn't able to get rid of Bunnell. You know.
He's been very, all through the year.
All through
very, disgusting
politics. But now I was kind of amused too. There's one thing on Bob's tape. He was very proud of the Alumni Association, made him an honorary member about 1950 or so.
And he's never had a college education.
No, but we gave him this membership card, honorary member of the alumni, and he was so proud of that, and he kept looking for it, and all of his, you know, how you get a whole stack of membership cards, and he kept saying, "Mrs. Keyes gave it to me, Mrs. Keyes gave it to me." Well, of course, I knew it wasn't you. It was Audrey Loftus gave it to him. She was the secretary. But somehow or other, he associated you, and he kept saying, "Now, Mrs. Keyes gave me this." And, of course, had he reflected, you'd been gone for quite a long time then, you know, and you were never an Alumni Association anyway. But
I am considered an alumni.
Yeah.
Even now.
Oh, good.
I don't know how, but...
Well,
I guess
Audrey Loftus, you know, about that time decided that a lot of the old-timers like yourselves that had been on the faculty and staff You've got, we're kind of put on the mailing list and treated like alumni, because heaven's sakes.
Well, then I have contributed that
sure.
this year.
Well, that might be part of it.
Anyhow, I am not
yeah.
really an alumni.
Yeah. Well, now, of course, you recall...
Where I come in, yeah. and Laverne come in here ahead of me.
But he talked so much that you couldn't have failed to remember his Wickersham and he,
oh, yes.
how much they
oh.
hated each other.
Oh,
and Wickersham done more for this country. The railroad and the college started
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
There hasn't been any of the others done that much, have they?
But he was
his political record looks pretty good.
Yes,
you know, Wickersham, yeah.
And Dr. Bunnell was an ardent Democrat.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That was part
yeah.
of the trouble.
Well, of course, the charges were that kept Bunnell from getting reconfirmed in his judgeship, you see.
Oh.
You see, he served a 4-year term, and then he started another term. In fact, he served three years of another term as judge. But the Senate would never confirm the second 4-year appointment because Wickersham charged him with using the office for political purposes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he really, what it narrowed.
That would make Bunnell yeah. sorry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he couldn't abide Wickersham.
I know he
oh,
could,
no.
but he did ask
oh,
him
yeah.
to come for the dedication.
Oh, yeah. Well, the
reason.
Yeah, that's right.
But he was very nice to me.
Oh,
and I
yes.
think afterwards they kind of made it up.
I think they did. They had.
They
I think they respected each other.
Yes, I think
they
so.
They realized that it was just political.
Afterwards.
You know, I think
but
so.
But when I first came here, he and Mr. Wickersham
oh.
just...
Yeah, that was a bad word to mention around.
Very much so.
Do you ever remember him talking about the Dempsey case?
No, I don't.
Well, the Dempsey Maybe case, is it haunted him through the years. Dempsey was a criminal that he sentenced to hang. In fact, he committed a double murder. He murdered a woman in Anchorage, and then he murdered a deputy marshal in Seward around about 1920 or so, when Bunnell happened to be down in that area helping out. You know, the judges would go over to another district
yeah.
If the calendar was pretty full. He tried the case in Valdez, and he sentenced and was found guilty, two separate trials for the two separate murders, and Dempsey was found guilty by both on both trials, and Bunnell sentenced him to hang. Then, by some means or other, the sentence was commuted, and it was bounced all the way up to the President of the United States, and that was Wilson at the time. And Wilson commuted it to life imprisonment because Mrs. Roosevelt, Mrs. Wilson was dead against capital punishment. She just didn't believe in it, and so that was it. Well, anyway, Dempsey, after serving some 20 years, first a little time at McNeil Island and then at Leavenworth, Kansas, he was transferred back about 1940, back to McNeil Island, and I'll be darned, in a few months he escaped.
Oh, I remember.
And
that.
Then from there on, Bunnell was in deathly fear that that fellow was going to get even with him.
Yes, I remember.
Do you
that.
Remember
I'd
it now? That's what
case.
It was. That was
uh-huh.
the Dempsey case. Well, at any rate, you know, even in his declining years, before his death, you see, he would have never been really surprised if Dempsey had walked in the door with a gun in his hand or something. He was. As he got older, you know, this kept worrying him more. And so that was, I thought I should include, it's an interesting case anyway, so I thought mm-hmm. I'd slip that in as part of his judgeship days. Well, at any rate, I'm now right down here. I'm down to chapter 19, and I'm talking about, and these are sad years in many respects, because his
sure
health was,
they are.
Oh yes, his health was failing.
Because we can't help you much.
Oh, no.
He did, when he came out, he did ask if he couldn't come up to our place and I worked with him
mm-hmm.
to write his memoirs.
No.
And but the conditions were such I don't wish this part taken.
Okay.
You can take that gladly. Miss Torgerson, she didn't cook in the summertime. Miss Luke cooked in the summertime alone and did the baking.
Oh, yeah.
And Miss Torgerson came back from her vacation and Bunnell liked her pretty well, and he thought it'd be nice to her, and he said, well, Miss Torgerson, I'd like to have you sit at my table and have dinner with me tonight. Oh, she says, Dr. Bunnell, I didn't have any education to sit at your table and eat with you. Well, Bunnell says, Miss Torgerson, I didn't have any either. So it'll be just fine. So we enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
And Tom Hick used to get an extra head of celery. I don't know if you remember, he was crazy about green stuff. And he put that green head of celery down alongside of him, and Bunnell had come along when Tom had his mouth full and snitched the celery, and then Tom didn't have any celery.
I remember Tom was somewhat of a vegetarian, wasn't he?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Tom,
do you remember that?
No, I don't, but I remember hearing about it because he just...
We still hear from him.
Oh yeah, he graduated when I left, see. Uh-huh. Tom finished in 33.
A very fine boy and a fine man.
Yes, indeed.
He's back in the States now. He's in Connecticut.
Oh, is he?
We hear from him right along.
He was in Chicago for a long time, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, and then he was
the engineering
sent to Bangkok.
Company.
And he was in Bangkok for many years.
Oh, is that true?
Uh-huh.
Is he retired now, or do you
no,
think he's still practicing?
No, on that big bridge.
Yeah.
Yes, it's some big bridge being built. And
yeah.
He's on
he
that
said it'll be 2 years or 3 years.
Yeah, he's a tremendously, vigorous man,
yes,
you know.
He was.
Strong
and athlete.
Yeah.
And
wonderful,
a
very
goodness.
Upright, fine person. He didn't drink, he didn't smoke.
Oh, no. No, he was really, really
he's
quite
nice.
A nice fella. Now, there's one thing in the early chapters here, and I need... Now, I want to quote from a letter that you wrote to Dr. Bunnell when he was in Washington, I think. And the reason behind it is, of course, it's a wonderful letter. You were his secretary, and he wanted to know everything that was going on the
yes,
campus.
I tried.
And so Laverne here sat down, and you told it just beautifully, of all the things that were happening on the campus, you know.
Well,
and the ramification of things that the president would be interested in, you knew what he, and so you told him everything that was going on. Of course, I didn't quote another letter when you had to tell him about some girl that was getting in trouble here and one thing or other. I didn't quote that letter.
Well,
but the letter that I quote, I think you won't object to. But you wrote it very well.
Greatly worried about this. The smokestack was laying on the ground. How in the world I was ever going to get it up? But I took Charlie Wheeler and we went out in the woods and got a gin pool and we borrowed a hoist and a...
Now you're talking about the first smokestack?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we borrowed a little boiler, a little upright boiler, for to furnish steam for this little hoist. And some of the professors were talking about, but George couldn't put that stack up. And got him real worried. And he used to come down and pester me about that. And I said, I'll get it up. You don't need to worry about it. I said, I've been doing things like that all my life. So the day I was ready to put it up, I never went and told him. I got steam up, and I guess he was watching. So he come over to the window in the girls' dressing room and watched. And when I got the steam up, and Charlie Wheeler and Joe Flackney to watch the guy lines, and we pulled it up and got it in place. Why, he came down, well, George, he darn near had tears in his eyes. He said, everybody said you couldn't do it, and they had me believing it. And he says, here's a check for $100. He says, you know, we haven't got much money, but he says, gee whiz, he says, you sure earned that with all the opposition you had.
Oh, boy. Well, that was a pretty fairly high...
72 feet.
Was it 72 feet?
Yeah, it was hard
to
get. But then, after we used her for about 10 years, she settled down in the middle. And I went to Paul Hopkins about that. And he said, I'll tell you what it is, George. It's the sulfur in the coal going up there and condensing at a certain place and the water running down. The sulfur in those gases.
Yeah.
Running down, making sulfuric gas, and it's cut through the steel and cut the rivets. So, I hated to go and tell Bunnell.
Yeah.
I had to take that stag down.
Yeah.
Had two sets of wire wires on it. So, I told him, I said, I got some bad news for you. You won't like to hear it. Well, he said, let's hear it. So, I told him, well, he said, can you do it without getting anybody hurt? I said, you bet I can. So, we loosened the guy wires on one side and let it fall.
You toppled it over, kind of.
You toppled it over, then we had to build a new one and go through that all again.
Yeah, I think I was here then.
Yeah, I think you were.
Yeah, I think that summer. It was in the early
30s. The hardest still helped me on this.
It was around 34, 35 in there someplace.
But see, I was a boilermaker, and that helped a lot.
Yeah.
To get those things like that done. And then there was another thing I have never told to anybody that I think you probably ought to know. I had my dad helping me on the night shift when the first year with that new boiler.
Uh-huh.
And he drained all the water out of that new boiler one night.
Uh-oh.
And, but it didn't burn it too bad. It was just building the fire to steam her up when I noticed it. I noticed the shiny valve stem on the blow-off valve. The pecking had worn all the rust off of the valve stem.
Yeah.
And I noticed that sticking out there, and oh my God, I ran and dumped the fire in the furnace, and we had one boiler left, and I couldn't use that the way it is. And I worked night and day. I worked in the, I never told Vanell because I know he just all go to pieces.
Yeah.
I worked in the night, and then I tried to catnap a little bit in the daytime, but I worked all night long. It was a good thing I was a boilermaker. I got her going again, and then in the meantime, I had Laverne, she wasn't working for Vanell then at that time, to order a new set of tubes, and I was going to pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
So then in the spring, we got through the winter all right. I never said a word to him. In the spring, I told, called him on the phone. I said, there's something I'd like to have you come down. I want to talk to you about. And he said, I'll be right down. So I told him what happened. I said, I'm not blaming anybody else. I said, I'm the man in charge, and I take the blame. And I want to pay for it. I've already paid for these tubes. And he started to cry. And he said, George, he said, by God, I said, if I ever had faith in you, he said, I got it now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he said, you're not going to pay for those tubes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, that was one thing that has bothered me all these years. Yeah. And I have nightmares yet of that thing, that brand new boiler being burned.
Well, if you really heated her up to full heat without water, she'd have just kind of, well, she wouldn't have exploded,
well,
would
no,
she?
No. But have any pressure in it. But it did make all those tubes leak.
Yeah, I see.
They lost the tension on those tubes. Yeah. They all had to be done over again, and then I had to put new tubes in.
Yeah.
Well, I happened to be a boilermaker, and I got a little compressor from the railroad company. They loaned me one of the compressors, and I set it down there so I could do it there.
Yeah.
For five things that he did wrong. And Maxie went and told the other students that Bunnell kicked him out on one point.
Oh.
And some of these boys were working for me, and Bunnell came down to me and he says, I thought you told me that men like Flackney and Tom Hake and Al Dorst and Jack Dorst were honorable and stood by, and I said, they do, I'd fight for them. Well, he says, I had to dismiss Maxie Miller the other day, and he says, the students are gone on a strike, and your boys are in with them. Well, I says, what's the trouble? He said, well, it's this five counts that I've got against Maxie, and he's only told them about one. So I got a hold of these boys and called them in, and I said, here now, there's something wrong. I said, you fellas didn't get the facts. Vanell was down here with the letter and showed me, and it's five counts against Maxie, and you've been telling me it's only one.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, you better get a hold of that letter, the whole bunch of you, and read it, and then, by golly, I want you to go and apologize to Vanell and get on the job and get going again. So they did. They went back and apologized to Vanell. I know one or two of them kicked about it.
Yeah.
About having to apologize. They said, well, one fellow said, I never apologized to anybody. Well, I said, you can always commence.
Yeah. Well, first time for everything.
So they did, and everything was smoothed out. I heard Maxie Miller is dead now.
Yeah.
But I wonder now how Maxie felt about that. after he'd grown up and mellowed a little bit.
That's true too. That's why so many of these college capers and things, you know, it's unfair to judge a person, or you know, only by some activity, a youthful prank, I suppose. Well, I tell you, I did want to take you down and show you the archives. Now, unless there's some little story or a particular thing, I think that we've covered in our correspondence, and you know, that's the story there in the alumnus. You know, you wrote me those nice stories about the power plant and all.
There's one other little story.
Yeah.
That was kind of serious at the time, but it didn't amount to an awful lot. Our first vacation was 2 weeks, and we were gone on the highway for 2 weeks. But we left Saturday morning, and we got back Saturday evening, and one Saturday in between, of course.
Yeah.
Well, but Al was sore about that, about being 15 days. And I was so dumb, it didn't dawn on me that we had taken 15 days, because I thought Saturday morning and Saturday evening was 14 days. Well, we had quite an argument about that, and I said, well, after all the overtime that I put in for you, and for you to be sore about that, I said, it's a pretty doggone small thing. So then I went back up and I counted them on the calendar, and by golly, it was 15 days. And I never apologized to him, because he was a doggone mean to me.
Oh, I had those altercations too, you know. But, and probably a good thing to do, you know, was to just cut off communication, just quit talking.
Yeah.
Just quit talking. He'd quit talking, you'd quit talking. Well, then after a while, maybe he'd think it over. You know, you've gone through that. Because there's no use trying to argue. He was the expert as far as argumentation and points of law, and you know, he could talk you down 7 ways to Sunday. Best thing to do is just maybe just clam up and.
Well, one time when we were building the power plant, I didn't. We was arguing about, and you had in your book there, but not all of it, about the size of the wire.
Yeah.
And I said, well, Judge, if I come up here and tell you how to run the college, you know it's crazy. Yes, he said, I would. I said, it's the same identical thing, you come down and tell me what size of wire to use. Well, he said, I guess you're right, George. He said, go ahead and order that triple on.
Oh, dear, yeah. Now, you see this picture behind you, you know, that's the one that he didn't like. That's the one the alumni gave him, and it's really a poor picture, because what happened was, this was when he was really ill, that they took colored slides. They went down, got him out of sick bed, put on the robes, and took colored snapshots of him, sent it out to Ziegler, and Ziegler painted from the slides. Well, that's the way Bunnell looked. Well, of course, they unveiled it then at the Emeritus Day ceremony. Most everyone thought it was terrible, you know. It was almost a death mask. And Bunnell hated it with a vengeance. And I think that kind of inspired him to get better, because, by golly, after he improved in looks, he went to Seattle and had his photograph taken by Ellis, or Kennel Ellis, or one of those good photographers. And then he took that photo up to Ziegler and said, now paint this one. And Ziegler did. And it's a beautiful portrait, and that's the one that he gave then to the university to put this thing in the vault, and I think it's still in the vault someplace.
There's one of him in the Earl Weisslein's office.
That's the one. That's the photograph.
That's the way I remember him.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes, and that's a good picture,
yeah.
I think.
Now, that's the one he had taken about 1952 or 3. Oh. It was after this one, because he had regained his health then and really looked fine.
But the one on that bronze plaque down there, to me, is awful.
Terrible. Well,
and I don't like the one in the president's office either.
No, I don't either.
But this other one, I think, is excellent.
That's right. I'm going to see if I can get that one for a kind of a frontispiece for my book. You know, there should be one good, if depending upon the price and how much my budget will allow. I'd like to have that for my frontispiece. Nice.
I don't know whether you know or not, but probably you do, that Mrs. Pinnell was the one that had taken out the seal.
Yes, he mentions that several times.